inform.
Religious freedom is about people of faith being able to live out their faith, live out their convictions, no matter where they are.
We equip.
Sacred honor is the courage to speak truth, to live out your free speech.
We also rejoice in our sufferings because we know that suffering produces perseverance, perseverance character, and character hope.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome to The Core here on American Family Radio. Glad to have you with us on today's edition of the show. We've got a jam-packed show and a couple guests on, and you'll want to stay tuned through the entire hour today here on American Family Radio. Before we jump into some of the news items that I want to get to and some clips I want to play, let's turn our attention to the scripture. Proverbs chapter 13 is where we have been this week, looking at verse 1. A wise son accepts his father's discipline, but a scoffer does not listen to rebuke. A wise son accepts his father's discipline, but a scoffer does not listen to rebuke. And so honoring thy father and mother, which is one of the Ten Commandments, there's a reason that's in there. There's a reason that God instructs us to do such, because great wisdom can be learned from our mother and our father. And Proverbs chapter 13, verse 1, points exactly to the same principle. Well, the breaking story late this week was on Thursday when California Senator Padilla barged into a press conference that the Department of Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem was holding with Border Patrol, with Immigration and Customs Enforcement, with the National Guard, with the FBI in Los Angeles to show support for their efforts, and we'll break all this down for you. But this all broke on Thursday, and the Democrats are in a tizzy. They are in a predicament. And what's going on here, folks, is this is all planned. All right, so let me set this up for you before we think that this is all organic and that the rioters are just upset at President Trump and they're just taking off of work and coming to, you know, let their voice be heard. Folks, this is all pre-planned. Okay, this is all orchestrated and it's all pre-planned. Some of it might be organic. I'm not saying that 100% of it is pre-planned, but the fundamentals of it are, okay? And there might be some rare organic protests that are happening, but this is pre-planned, and let me tell you why. All right, Immigration and Customs Enforcement has been running operations for decades. All right, they've been running these type operations where they apprehend illegal immigrants, they deport them, etc. This is not something new, okay? Obama did this, Bush did this, Biden did this, Trump 1 did this, all right, Clinton did this. This isn't new, okay? And when you look at the numbers, in Los Angeles, when this all transpired a little over a week ago in Los Angeles, outside of the ICE detention facility in Los Angeles, they went from zero agitators, zero protesters, to 1,000 in roughly 2 hours. Zero to 1,000 in 2 hours. You can't look at that and say that that's organic. That's just not. It's not organic. This was organized. This was planned. Now, were there leaks where somebody inside the LAPD, somebody inside ICE leaked that these raids were going to happen? Probably so. And then 1,000 turned into 2,000, and before you know it, you have tens of thousands of rioters, agitators, and looters. And they just happened to conveniently come across pallets of bricks, pallets of rocks, and also Molotov cocktails that they can light on fire and throw at federal law enforcement officers. All of this is not organic. And the left's plan, I've been hearing rumblings of this, the left's plans have been recently, and this probably goes back months as far as planning goes, the plan has been to do these type riots, have these type confrontations, and then make President Trump look like the strongman, look like the overreacher, look like the dictator that they try to describe him as. All right, so this has all been planned, and how you can know it's been planned is because, remember the Democrat congressmen and women that were trying to trespass in New Jersey in Newark at the ICE detention facility there? One of the congressmen actually was charged with a felony count, or multiple felony counts, for trying to barge her way into the ICE facility and assault officers while she's doing it. And she's actually already been charged by the DOJ in the U.S. Attorney's Office. And that was weeks ago. That wasn't like yesterday or last week in L.A. That was in New Jersey weeks ago. And then you've got Maxine Waters trying to show up at the National Guard at the federal facility in Los Angeles. You've got Senator Padilla from California trying to rush Kristi Noem at this press conference. And despite what they say, let me just tell you about this confrontation. The senator was trying to rush the podium. All right. I watched the video. The senator has no identification on, has no security pin, which they're all supposed to wear around Secret Service and the FBI and DHS. No staffer notified the HHS that, hey, the senator is going to be president. He would like to ask a few questions. None of that. He just shows up, gets in front of all the cameras, and gets at the rope line and starts rushing the podium. And then Secret Service intervenes, FBI intervenes, DHS intervenes, and then before you know it, he's drug out because he's resisting law enforcement. And it was all for show. It was all for show. And then, of course, all the cameras are running. Now Chuck Schumer's mad. But here's what I think is going to have to happen here. I think President Trump and his team are going to have to go even harder. And there's multiple reasons. The first reason is because it's the right thing to do. And when I say go harder, I mean more raids, more arrests, more forces, more pressure, more presence, all options on the table. Because President Trump was elected in both 2016 and 2024 on the fundamental promise to crack down on this mass importation of illegal immigrants. And now the latest numbers I'm seeing, I thought it was 10 million that Biden let into our country. The latest number I'm seeing, and this is coming from the government, is 21 million. This is what President Trump, he keeps using 21 million. I didn't realize it was 21 million. I thought it was 10. Now, maybe it was 10 million that they encountered at the border, and then who knows how many gotaways. 20 million over 4 years. That's what they're saying now. These are official government statistics. But let's go through this. I'm going to play this first clip. This is the California senator that tried to rush the podium and crash Secretary Noem's press conference. Of course, not being able to see this video, it's not as good, but it's still the audio of the confrontation. Let's listen.
I'm Senator Alex Padilla. I have questions for the secretary, because the fact of the matter is a half a dozen stealing criminals that you're rotating on your...
How many of our ICE agents have been doxxed for doing their duty, how they have been targeted.
Well, there you have it. That's the senator. And this is completely unnecessary. This is completely unnecessary. And I want to make one point on this whole oversight thing, because the Democrats keep saying, we're just trying to do our constitutional duty of oversight. They show up at the Department of Education building. They want to barge in the front door and have this all of a sudden they want to meet with the secretary. And then, you know, they show up at all these federal buildings that we just want to meet with the secretary. Well, folks, let me just explain. This is not how oversight works. All right, this is not how oversight works. And this is why it's so disingenuous. And we know these people are liars. Why are we surprised, right? But let me explain to you, the average voter, the average layperson out there, how this is not how federal oversight works, congressional oversight works, rather, and how it actually is supposed to work. To think that congressmen and senators can randomly show up at federal executive level operations, a complete different branch of government, let me mind you, that they can just show up while federal officials, under the orders of the President of the United States, are carrying out their daily functions, to think that you can just show up and interrupt operations and have your quote-unquote checks and balances and your oversight, boy, are you wrong. That's not how this works. Technically, legally, and constitutionally, the secretary could have said that the senator is not even allowed in the building. Because how can you have separation of powers when you've got one branch of government, i.e. Congress, that can willy-nilly show up unannounced to federal buildings and disrupt operations? That's not oversight. I'll tell you how oversight works. And if the senator was genuine about oversight, he would have done this. Congress has the legal authority to initially request testimony of anyone, not even government officials, anyone. Congress can request testimony of anyone, even non-government officials. They can say, I want Walker Wildman to show up to testify tomorrow at 7 p.m. And if I refuse, they can subpoena me. And if I don't obey the subpoena, well, the U.S. Marshals or the FBI or the U.S. Attorney's Office will contact me, and then eventually I'll be charged and arrested. Ask Steve Bannon. Ask Peter Navarro. That's how oversight works. Congress only controls Congress. Congress doesn't control the executive branch. And they don't have any constitutional legal right to interfere with executive level operations, executive branch operations outside of Congress. And so this notion that lawmakers can just all of a sudden show up at the White House, at the Labor Department, at the FBI building, and you just fill in the blank. This notion that congressmen, that senators can just willy-nilly show up unannounced to executive buildings and just get let in, and they can disrupt operations and they can interfere in the press conference, that is not legal or constitutional under any circumstance. But Democrats don't want you to know the truth, and they don't want you to know how these things operate. This was the U.S. attorney out of this area, I think Central California, the U.S. attorney here talking about how he is going to continue pressing forward in felony charges against anyone who disrupts ICE operations in Los Angeles and the surrounding area. Let's listen to clip two.
On behalf of my office and the Department of Justice, I'm here to show our support and our collaboration with the Department of Homeland Security in their mission to protect the American people and to do immigration enforcement operations, specifically at targeted known criminals, which is the primary focus of most of our missions to date. I want to also thank the National Guard and the military. We had judicial warrants to do what we did on both Friday and Saturday. And the amount of resistance and organized agitators that showed up to try to impede us was overwhelming. And we're really grateful to the President for deploying the Guard, which allowed us to continue our mission undeterred to enforce the law and to keep our people and our buildings safe. And that's really important. And my office has been aggressive in bringing charges. We charged several people over the weekend who dared to assault our agents. They threw rocks, they threw stones, they were breaking up concrete. It was out of control and it was violent. And some people in the state of California have been conditioned to think that there's no consequences for criminal activity. And you know, that might be true for the state of California, but it's not true with the federal government. And we will bring charges and you will go to federal prison. This is the federal government. This is not the state government. As the president said, if you spit, we hit, and we'll hit you with a felony.
Well, there you have it. That's the U.S. attorney from that area in California talking about what's going on in Los Angeles. So back to my point, I think President Trump needs to lean in here. And this is why I'm glad we have Tom Homan as the border czar, because he's not, if you ask Tom Homan, he's not backing down. And so what you're going to have here, because of this anarchy, because of this lawlessness, you're going to have the agitators. This is going to continue. As long as the Democrats condone it and facilitate it, this will continue. So President Trump is going to have to authorize the National Guard in multiple states, possibly active duty military, to surge resources to basically enable ICE to do their jobs. Because right now, ICE is having to not only apprehend illegal immigrants, but having to fend off agitators. And you can't do both. Not safely. And so if I'm President Trump, I lean in here. This is a overwhelmingly popular move. This is what people voted for President Trump for. So I don't think he needs to back down. I don't think he needs to pull out of California. I don't think he needs to go soft. I think he needs to lean in. I would ramp up operations and use overwhelming federal force to show these Democrat lunatics who's in charge.
The month of June has been hijacked by the anti-Christian culture to show their pride in something God calls an abomination. When you support AFR, you help us continue to stand for godly values and provide the resources for you to stay in the know about the enemy's tactics. To say thank you for your gift this month, we'll give you the booklet, Inside the LGBTQ Push of the 1990s, to help strengthen your convictions. Just go to afr.net/offers. afr.net/offers.
At the Core podcast are available at afr.net. Now, back to At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to this edition of The Core. Walker Wildman here with you on American Family Radio. afr.net is the URL, and please don't forget to subscribe, or to download, rather, the AFR app. And speaking of subscribing, you can subscribe to, or like, or follow is the new word out there, the podcast, wherever you listen to podcasts, whether on Apple, Android device, Spotify, etc. You can subscribe to or follow the podcast At the Core wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll have it queued up in your library each and every day with the latest episode. Introducing our guest, Jason Snead is with us. He's executive director of the Honest Elections Project Action, to talk about what's been going on in Texas and the legislature. Jason, welcome to the program.
Well, thanks for having me.
Jason, before we jump into this legislation that was unfortunately blocked in Texas by the Democrats, give us an update on your work, on your organization, and what you guys focus on.
Well, we're an organization dedicated to fighting for every American's right to vote in free and fair elections. So we've been fighting in states all over the country to make sure that we have common sense protections like voter ID, bans on foreign influence in our elections, stopping ranked choice voting, and much more. It's been a fantastic year for election integrity in so many states. But unfortunately, in one of our most conservative, Texas, we saw a number of really good bills go down in the 11th hour, thanks to some of the partisan actions of the Democratic lawmakers there. And that was disappointing, but it was more of an aberration when you actually look at what conservative states were able to get accomplished with the election integrity across the country.
Jason, tell us a little more details about this situation in Texas, because obviously Texas is a Republican majority state in both chambers, and obviously Governor Abbott's a Republican. So what kind of tactics did the Democrats deploy here to effectively block this election integrity legislation?
Yeah, we saw a lot of good bills get introduced in the Texas Senate and clear that particular chamber, and then go to the House, where it seemed that the Democrats had a little bit more sway. And what we saw with a couple of measures in particular, the attempt by Texans to ban ranked choice voting, and another measure which would have protected the state against foreign money coming in to influence state constitutional amendments, we saw both of those get killed in the dead of night using procedural tactics. They filed what are called points of order, and essentially challenged minutia within the description of the bills that lawmakers are given. And the decision was made by the leadership in the chamber to move on. What we often see in the late stages of legislative sessions in any state really is that there's obviously a time crunch and decisions have to be made. But it was really this tactic by the Democrats that killed those bills. And let's be really clear here. We're talking about, on the one hand, a bill to prevent foreign nationals from laundering money into campaigns to change constitutional amendments. So we had Democrats kill a bill that essentially is now leaving Texas exposed to foreign influence. And on the other, we saw them kill a bill to ban a convoluted scheme that had been rejected in states across the country called ranked choice voting. So it's pretty astounding they decided to fight on those bills.
Yeah, both of these are very egregious forms of abuse of the process and corruption of America's electoral system as we've known it for nearly 250 years. And that is that the foreign influence in elections and trying to ban that is really a non-controversial thing. And it's rather shocking that there's these loopholes that have existed previously. So we'll talk about that first. And then the ranked choice voting, that's what they do in Alaska and a couple other states. And it's a disaster. It's a disaster. Voters are confused. They don't know what they're voting for. And it's a very convoluted process, ripe for corruption and ripe for misinformation. But on the foreign influence topic, this isn't a theoretical problem or a hypothetical problem. This is actually a problem. And there was some studies done in Florida that showed when it comes to their ballot initiative process this past cycle, there was foreign money funneled into Florida to influence the ballot amendment process. And if it can be done through that process, through that election, then it can be done with elected office as well.
Well, yeah, let's level set here a little bit. It has been illegal for decades for foreign nationals to finance the campaigns of candidates who are running for office, right? So it is a longstanding law that you cannot, if you are not an American citizen or a green card holder, you cannot give money to somebody running for office or to the PACs that support those folks. But what we have seen, pretty shockingly, actually, is that there is this loophole in that law, because under the terms of federal law, a ballot measure campaign is not considered an election. And so on the one hand, you have these laws that say foreign nationals can't influence elections. But on the other hand, they can pile millions of dollars into campaigns that, for instance, can change the rules of the very elections they're banned from influencing. So there's this astounding loophole, and we have seen it begin to be exploited over the last few years. There is one particular Swiss billionaire. He's a progressive. His name is Hans-Jörg Wyss, and he has made it his mission, in his own words, to reinterpret the American Constitution in the light of progressive politics. And he is actually one of the biggest donors to left-wing causes in the United States. But again, he's not an American citizen and he's not a green card holder. And he has given almost $300 million to a DC-based dark money group on the left called the 1630 Fund. And that group, at the same time as they're raising all this money from a foreign national, has turned around and pumped $130 million into progressive ballot measure campaigns in 26 states, Florida, Ohio, Michigan, Arkansas. All of these states have got this foreign tide funding going to progressive causes, trying to lock a progressive agenda into state constitutions. And it's bad enough that they're doing that, but the fact that they're using foreign money to do things like lock unrestricted abortion into state constitutions or change the laws that run American democracy, I think is certainly a bridge too far. And that's why we've seen so many states stepping up and trying to close that loophole this year.
Yeah, and to your point about the loophole, what makes the loophole egregious is that the loopholes being used to carry out the same effect as if you were funneling money into campaigns. And you mentioned how it's historically been outlawed to funnel foreign money directly into campaigns or to PACs or super PACs. But this loophole by funneling money into basically PR campaigns that pass these state ballot initiatives, it's de facto serving the same purpose as funneling money into the campaigns. I would argue it's actually more damaging because of what it takes to undo the ballot initiatives. And when you're looking at funding campaigns, you've got hundreds of people running for public office in every state, in the state legislature in both chambers, and then you've got some of the statewide office holders. And in order to fund that many campaigns with foreign money is logistically challenging. But what they're doing here with these ballot initiatives is they got one goal. They're not having to support 30 candidates. They're supporting one ballot initiative, but that ballot initiative has the force of law. And oftentimes, once it gets into place, it takes a lot of work to undo it. And so the damage here, I would argue, is even more than just foreign money hypothetically going into campaigns. The damage here is that state constitutions are being upended, and then the work that it takes to take that stuff back and undo it is very, very challenging. Looking at some of these pro-abortion amendments, I mean, the work that's going to have to be done in Kansas and other states to undo these pro-abortion ballot initiatives is very strenuous.
Yeah, that's right. And that's why they're using this constitutional amendment process, right? We elect lawmakers to write the laws in our states. And when the legislatures that we choose don't do what the left wants, they're using the ballot measure process to quite literally do an end run around democracy. And you're 100% right about the damage that can be done being potentially far more pervasive and far more deeply rooted in a ballot measure contest than necessarily in any one candidate race. I'll give you an example. There was a measure in Ohio last year called Issue One that was designed to take control of the state's redistricting process. Mm-hmm. And there was a highly, highly misleading campaign that was used to try to get that across the finish line. And millions of dollars in foreign tied money was pumped in to do it. If it had passed, it would have locked into Ohio's Constitution's rules that would have required them to gerrymander the state for political advantage. And it could have swung as many as 6 congressional districts from Republicans to Democrats. So that could decide control of the House of Representatives. And so now you have this long-standing constitutional amendment in Ohio, which thankfully was defeated, but it would have been locked into the state's constitution, would have forced an immediate redistricting, had a profound impact on the nation, and foreign money was used to help get that done. So that's why this process is so important to protect, and why I'm so glad that so many states, 17 in all, have introduced legislation. 6 have enacted laws this year alone to close this foreign funding loophole.
Let me ask you this, Jason. By the way, we were talking to Jason Sneed, executive director of the Honest Elections Project. The shenanigans that Mark Zuckerberg did in 2020, where he set up these nonprofits and ran get out the vote operations in deep blue districts, and just, you know, capitalized on the low hanging fruit of Democrat voters out there that were sitting on the sidelines. Has there been any reforms on that? I know Georgia did some stuff on this, but has anything been done on that? Because that was a major determinant in the 2020 outcome.
Yeah, that's right. And this Zuckbuck scheme was unprecedented in 2020. Frankly, it was shocking to see almost $500 million get routed through these two left-wing nonprofits. And then to see that money get disseminated using COVID as an excuse into largely blue areas. They were, you know, pumping money into areas that Joe Biden needed to win to drive up turnout in those swing states in particular. And they used the money and influence to skew election procedures, change literally the way people voted, and as you point out, potentially impact the 2020 election as well. So thankfully, we've seen actually about 30 states pass laws to make private election financing illegal. I'm a conservative. I'm all for privatization of many things, but I think that when it comes to running elections, that is absolutely something that should only be financed by taxpayers. And we need our election officials to be accountable to the voting public, not to these, you know, left-wing nonprofits routing money in. So that's been a great thing to see. Some of those bans have actually been passed on a bipartisan basis too. I should give credit to some honest brokers on the left who think that tampering with the system like that is wrong, even when it benefits your side. And we've also seen some new schemes get developed. So the same group that funneled most of that Zuckerberg money into those offices has come up with an entirely new and somewhat novel thing called the Alliance for Election Excellence. And it brings together other left-wing nonprofits, and it's designed to get around those bans. So even if you're in one of the states that has banned Zuckbucks, they figured out how to get around that ban. So now we're working with state legislatures across the country to enact what we've called the Zuckbucks 2.0 bans to make sure that you're not able to get around those very common sense protections against private funding.
Yeah, and one of the things that they did, and once again, we're going back to 2020 just because that's like Exhibit A to see how these loopholes were used when it comes to elections. The ballot harvesting or the ballot collecting process was a boon in the side of the left. And they used this to, I think they used it to win the election in 2020. When you look at the numbers, they had these nonprofits that were allegedly nonpartisan, but they were operating in deep blue precincts, which what's going to happen there is you're going to turn out the vote for the Democrats. That's what's going to happen. And they were virtually in no red areas, no red precincts. And they were turning out, they were harvesting Democrat votes, making it to where voters had to do very little work in order to turn their ballot in. And then they went and dumped them in these drop boxes. And that's where, you know, you get the documentaries, et cetera. And so that's a big deal as well, Jason, because there's many reasons why that's wrong. But one of the main reasons is your chain of custody. I mean, your chain of custody is very problematic when you have private nonprofit groups getting ballots on people's doorsteps, and then who knows what happens between the doorstep and the time it makes it to the election commissioner's office.
Well, that's right. And what we've seen time and time again is that, really the left is always trying to change election rules because they understand that if you can manipulate the process, you can manipulate the outcome of the elections. And that's why they're always, no matter what the claimed emergency is, they're always pushing the same set of so-called reforms, right? It's always about getting rid of voter ID laws. It's always about pushing all mail elections, legalizing vote harvesting. All of those sorts of basic, you know, left-wing ideas, and they push them no matter what, right? In 2017, let's go back even further than 2020. In 2017, 2018, they were pushing those reforms as a response to the so-called Russian collusion that Donald Trump had used to win the 2016 election. Then in 2020, they're pushing the same set of reforms because of COVID. And then in 2021, it's because of January 6th, right? It's always about changing elections to fit their preferred GOTV methodologies and to play into that network of nonprofits that you mentioned, which I've called the election industrial complex that the left pours hundreds of millions of dollars into. And it's all geared around essentially turning ballots into widgets. And it's not really about what a voter wants. It's about getting ballots into the hands of people and then having a harvester come to their door behind closed doors, influencing how they vote, and then making sure that those ballots are pulled in. That's how they want to win elections. And it's not really about an informed vote or the rights of voters. It's really just all about winning elections. And that's what they mostly care about.
Absolutely. Hey, Jason, thanks so much for coming on the program.
Thank you very much.
All right. Jason Sneed, Executive Director of the Honest Elections Project. And talking about some of the maneuvers that Democrats use in Texas to block legislation on this topic and what the latest ongoings are around the country on election integrity. All right, folks, we'll be back. One more segment left. Stay tuned.
At the Core podcast are available at AFR.net. Now, back to At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome to The Core here on American Family Radio. I'm Walker Wildman. Glad to have you with us on today's edition of the show. Back with Chris Woodward, as we have on each Friday's edition of the program. Chris joins us in the last segment from American Family News. And if you're looking for news from a trusted source and a Christian perspective, American Family News is the place to go, AFN.net. Chris, welcome back to the program.
Thank you. We made it through another week of crazy, crazy news.
Yeah. Yeah, it's with, you know, the last, pretty much since the Trump era, there's really no slow news cycle.
No, there really hasn't been. You go home and sometimes you feel like, you know, I really accomplished something. And then more often than not, you get home and you're like, man, I could have done so much more. But yeah. And the thing is, like, you know, it'll be something else tomorrow. So
exactly.
Keep going.
Chris, let's talk some economics and then maybe we'll have time to continue the discussion on the immigration situation and the rioters and the looters. Mm-hmm. But on the economy, we did get some inflation numbers earlier in the week and some input from Trump on what he thinks about Powell and whether he should lower rates or not.
Yes, we did get inflation news in. As you said here, inflation is down. So for a Democrat member of the House or somebody on a television screen to tell you that prices are going up, that's not entirely accurate, as people like the Treasury Secretary would tell you. But I've got some sound here from an organization called Job Creators Network, which is an organization that advocates for job creators, especially small businesses. And they are taking this good news involving inflation being down as all the more reason why people like Jerome Powell needs to listen to AFA at the Core and cut the rates to make some changes there with interest rates. Here is Elaine Parker of Job Creators Network.
We are very excited to see President Trump's pro-growth policies, including energy dominance and deregulation, have finally ended Bidenflation, bringing much-needed relief to consumers and small businesses. Today's release of the CPI, which rose by 0.1%, tracks with the recent personal consumption index, which was also 0.1%, and that is the gauge that the Federal Reserve uses as far as deciding on interest rate cuts. So we're hopeful that the Fed will start to move towards cutting rates so that small businesses can have better access to capital.
Now, some people kind of hear, you know, big deal, small business. I don't own one. Why do I care? The better off small businesses are, the better off you are. The better off Main Street is in your town, the better off your town is, which is why you should care what the government is doing to small businesses. They are the backbone of our economy. They have been. They will continue to be. And the better off they are, the better off you are.
Chris, the CPI inflation report, which you're talking about, and then, of course, PPI came out this week as well, but the CPI number being well below 3% in the 2.4 to 2.5% range, it's a four-year best. And a five-year best on PPI, that is, I'm not sure what else Powell is looking for here, unless he's being Mr. Technical and he wants to get to 1.9 because 2 was his goal.
Yes.
Then he's going to be waiting some time because I'm not sure you can run a deficit that we run and run below 2% inflation. I'm not sure that's realistic.
Yeah. Energy prices, if the price of, let's say, gasoline continues to come down, theoretically, that will help the problem all that much more. It will help the economy all that much more. The bad thing is I saw an interview with the energy secretary yesterday on Chris Wright, on Fox News Channel, and Secretary Chris Wright said, things are going well. Trump's brought prices down. I'm not exactly sure how much more down they're going to be because we're getting to a point where it's not necessarily profitable right now for an oil company to continue drilling. So while, yes, you're paying a lot less for gas today than you were this time last year, I don't know that we're going to get down to $1.95 or something like that national average.
Well, definitely not if Israel bombs Iran.
Very true. Very true, because that's only going to make it go all that much more. It's going to go up if that happens.
Yeah, because of Iran's oil production. And theoretically, nobody's supposed to be buying Iran's oil, right? Because of sanctions, but they are.
It's all the more reason why you should go after your own resources and you don't have to worry about conflicts in other parts of the world.
Exactly. That's a good point. You know, Chris, the energy cost coming down has been a large driver of bringing down inflation. Mm-hmm. I think that there's two areas that are really hurting people when it comes to Powell not lowering rates. And I understand these rates are not exactly correlated, although they do trend together. They do kind of play off one another. And I'm talking about the refinancing rate for America's debt, the government debt, and then the mortgage rates. The mortgage rates really follow the 10-year treasury yield, but they're about around 7%. The 30-year mortgage is around 7% right now. And Chris, that's a problem, especially when you're talking about home prices still being at historic highs.
Yeah.
And they've come down a little bit, but they haven't come down to pre-COVID levels. And right. I'm not sure we can expect them to.
Yeah, sorry, my phone's going off there. Yeah, I mean,
is it Trump calling you?
Yeah, I really liked what you said there. It was a big, beautiful statement.
Yeah, just don't say you didn't talk to him, because he'll send a screenshot like you did with Gavin Newsom.
Yeah,
he sent a screenshot. He's like,
"What are you talking about, guy?"
Yeah, he said, "I did talk to Gavin Newsom, and here's the evidence."
Yeah, I mean, housing prices, it's still a problem, especially for people like our age and younger, millennials, Gen Zers, especially Gen Zers.
Trying to get into a house or a dream house.
Yeah, if you're buying a home today, you do not have, I'm just throwing a number out, $350,000 available. Even if you're somebody like myself in your 40s, you still probably have some other debt-to-income ratio situations that would prohibit you from being able to make a payment.
Right.
7%, it's not the worst thing in the world. We've had worse rates, but we probably have more debt outside of a home than previous generations.
Sure. Yeah, and Chris, and this is my same point that I'll make, and I'll be making this point for the next 20 years. But historically speaking, you are correct. 7% interest rates are not doomsday. It's not apocalyptic. What makes it painful for people is the asset prices. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about the home prices. And to your point, you know, my wife and I, Lexi, we were talking the other morning about, you know, what would it be like? Could we even get into something that like comparable to what we're in today for the same price that our mortgage is? And the answer is no, you just absolutely can't. In order to maintain the mortgage, you would have to downgrade because of how ridiculous the housing market is overpriced. Now, I'm seeing some serious drops in home prices that I think is going to end up leveling things out in the long run, because the demand is just not there for these out of price range houses. And but yeah, to your point, who this really affects is not necessarily the people that are already locked in and who locked in at 2% and 3% interest rates. Mm-hmm. It affects these young people who are trying to get into their first house. They're the ones that are missing out on the opportunity. But Jerome Powell is being stubborn, and he's giving no indication that they're going to lower rates at any point in the future, Chris. And the government, we're going to have to refinance trillions of dollars in debt this year. And because Powell will not lower interest rates at all, we're going to have to finance hundreds of billions of dollars more in debt than we otherwise would have.
Yeah, on top of making, you know, the Senate would tell you that the big, beautiful bill is just loaded with a ton of spending. It's going to increase our national debt. So that would just be debt on top of debt on top of debt that our unborn descendants are going to be forced to pay should the Lord tarry and, you know, they live to see the year 300 or 1,000 or whatever.
Yeah, this, Chris, $9.2 trillion is how much the government has to refinance this year. That's a lot of money. $9 trillion. I didn't even realize it was that high. I thought it was a couple trillion. So $9 trillion, 9.2 to be specific, is what the U.S. government has to refinance this year under Jerome Powell's rates.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we're talking about mortgage rates and how much a percentage drop can affect mortgage cost. You look at $9 trillion. Imagine how much money you could save by Powell just dropping it a point over the next few months when it comes to refinancing America's debt. It makes you wonder what interest Powell's looking after, because he can't be looking after the U.S. interest, generally speaking, on the debt. Otherwise, you would lower rates, even as Trump said, temporarily, and refinance. And then if inflation peaks its ugly head again, you can raise rates again, even though I don't think raising rates fixes inflation. I think it's a government spending problem. But theoretically speaking, you could save the U.S. government trillions in interest payments over time if you simply temporarily lowered rates.
That's a good point. I mean, I don't know. Like, why would you not? I mean, at this point, what's it going to hurt to come down a little? Dip your toe in the water.
A quarter of a basis point, or like a quarter of a point you come down, and then do that for 2 months and keep an eye on things and check the inflation numbers and then do another quarter point drop. But they're not even doing that. And what makes it more frustrating, Chris, is that he did it before the election.
Yes.
He started he actually went a point. They dropped it a point before the election, or they began to drop it, eventually led to a point drop over the course of 3 months. But that happened in September, and inflation was higher than it is now, and they dropped it. So let me play this clip before we run out of time. Okay. This is President Trump talking about, if we don't do anything on entitlement spending, then these entitlement programs will become bankrupt, basically. Clip four.
We're going to, very important, Medicare and Medicaid are going to be strengthened, not hurt. You know, they're using fake narrative. Oh, we're going to, no, they're going to be strengthened. We're going to strengthen them. They're going to destroy them, because under their policies, Medicare and Medicaid go away. Social Security under them is going to be devastated. With us, it's going to be kept, but much stronger than before. And very interestingly, I saw this and I proved it, because for 4 years, I never hurt Medicare, Medicaid, or Social Security. I've already been there. But they're going to destroy Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security. They're going to wipe them out, in my opinion, because their policies are so bad, the country will have no money to pay for them. We're going to make them stronger than ever before. Thank you very much, everybody.
He's right, and he's saying what Democrats don't want to talk about, and that is that they're operating under the assumption that Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security are completely fine, completely solvent. They'll be here forever. Funds are completely healthy, but that's just not the case.
It's not. I've been here 15 years, and just about every year that I've been here, I have done a story with some think tank on a news report on when Social Security and Medicare are going broke, when they're going to be completely dry, and what will happen once we reach that point unless they fix it. So that's been around for a long time. It is also accurate to say that people have been lying or misleading people into believing there are cuts to Medicaid and Medicare, and I'm using air quotes for our listeners.
Right.
What they're talking about largely are reforms that will make sure that people who shouldn't be on it are not on it, which would save us money. And for those people that are eligible but are able-bodied and can work, that they're actually putting money into the system, that they have some skin in the game, as the saying goes here. Those are not putting mom in the wheelchair and wheeling her off the cliff kind of things like Democrats have been known to make campaign ads for. There's one that appears on Fox. I've seen it several times in the morning during Fox and Friends, where it's two people talking about her elderly mother and how, you know, they're going to cut Medicaid. I don't know what we're going to do with mom. It is so misleading. And for people to see that on a channel that they might watch and trust, they go, well, maybe there's something to this, and maybe Mike Johnson is wrong.
You know, Chris, it's really childish for the Democrats to not be able to have an adult conversation about what we need to do to make Medicaid solvent or any of the other programs, Medicare, Social Security. It really shows a level of ineptitude and childishness that the politicians just can't have an adult conversation. Instead, they want to politicize it, turn it into a campaign ad, and at the end of the day, nothing gets fixed. That's the reality. Thanks, Chris. Appreciate it. All right, folks, American Family News, AFN.net. Go there, check it out. All news on the economy, the culture, religious freedom, Christianity, all there at AFN.net. We'll see you next time.
Because of listeners like you, Preborn helped to rescue over 67,000 babies. Your $28 to sponsor one ultrasound doubled a baby's chance at life. Your tax-deductible gift saves lives. Please join us in this life-saving mission. To donate, go to preborn.com/AFR. Here now is your show host, Walker Wildman.
Will you take a moment and celebrate life with me? Last year, Preborn helped rescue over 67,000 babies from abortion. Hi, this is Walker Wildman, and I want to thank you for your partnership. Think about what you did. 67,000 babies are taking their first breath now because of you. Your $28 sponsored one ultrasound that was given to a woman as she was deciding about the future of her child. Once she saw her precious baby for the first time and heard their sweet heartbeat, her baby's chance at life doubled. But Preborn's mission is not only to rescue babies' lives, but also lead women to Christ. Last year, Preborn Network clinics saw over 8,900 women receive salvation. Your help is crucial to continue their life-saving work.
Your caring tax-deductible donation saves lives, so please be generous. To donate, go to preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR. Or dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250, B-A-B-Y. Your love can save a life.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.